can get my right notes together here. I'll be making some notes from time to time, primarily just jotting down proper names, and sometimes we have names that are
hard to spell.
Hard to spell if you would spell them because they're a transcriber. Yeah. Make it easier. All right, then I guess we're ready to start. This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry speaking with Dr. Calvin S. Fuller at his home in Vero Beach, Florida on April 29, 1986. Dr. Fuller, you were born on May 25, 1902 in Chicago. Can you tell me about your father, Julius, and your mother, Bessie?
Yes. Julius, my father, was one of five boys in the Fuller family. He had one sister. And I'd like to say something about the family itself in comparison with Bessie, my mother's family, who were the Southers. The Fullers were totally different than the Southers, all the boys. The Southers also were a big family. They were six boys and one girl, the girl being my mother. So we're talking a lot about boys and uncles. These were all uncles of mine. And the Fullers were inclined to be literary more than otherwise, and the Southers were more inclined to be doers. Needless to say, the Southers did better. But I thought that this is an interesting distinction to me as I look back, because I was really more involved with the Southers than I was with the Fullers, since I lived a mile from my home. And my father was a bookkeeper and was very good at numbers. In those days we had no computers, so he was a human computer. And he tried to teach me how to do arithmetic fast and use various tricks, but I never did learn any. My mother was a tomboy as a young girl, and grew up to be a housewife, of course, raised me and my sister. And she liked to paint, went to the Art Institute, and took what girls in those years took. Art, mostly, things of that sort. But not many of them worked. She painted china and fired china and did some selling of the china, because our family at times needed some extra cash. I think, I don't know whether you would like to know certain other aspects of my parents or not.
Oh, why don't you go ahead?
But I did want to go back into this distinction between the two families, the Fullers and the Southers, that I mentioned before. The Southers, and particularly my youngest uncle, I always thought had a tremendous influence on me. He was only 4 years older than I, and was a rather outstanding person in that he was not trained in academic surroundings at all, but learned by himself, mostly. A lot of technology and things today which we would class as technology. And he was involved in all sorts of mechanical, electrical, and as a ham, as a radio ham, for example, activities, which brushed off on me because I was usually his assistant. Being 4 years younger, I could be used as an assistant.
What was his name?
His name was Norman. Norman G. Souther. He was, as I say, sort of an unusual boy, being the end of the family, and I think much too serious. His father was my grandfather was general passenger agent for the Chicago, Milwaukee, and St. Paul Railroad. And he had been a telegrapher in his day. So he was kind of glad to see Norman go into the ham radio and use the telegraph key that he had used many years before. I got into it, and it's a sort of strange thing because I later got into semiconductors, and here we were putting cat's whiskers down in galena and iron sulfide crystals and getting the time signals from Arlington, Virginia, and things of that sort. Now, he later communicated with hams. He had a big antenna in his backyard that went for about 75 feet, and he was constantly storing up hams with his call signal. So I got into the radio business more or less by the back door, but I became pretty much involved in it in constructing news couplers and things of that sort, and got an early interest, therefore, in electrical and mechanical things.
And did you go to school in Chicago?
Yeah. When I was about five, we moved away from a house we had across from the grand folks, about a mile away in the Hamilton Park. They lived in Auburn Park. And I attended, from six on, I attended the Harvard Grammar School, which was at 75th Street and Harvard, near Harvard Avenue.
Were there any teachers there and that had any influence at that early stage?
We had excellent teachers, but they didn't affect my scientific outlook at all. This came later in high school. But they were a very capable group of teachers, as you probably know. Back in those days, it was common for women who were housewives to teach in school, and they'd live near the school and go home and get supper as an ordinary housewife would.
Mm-hmm.
But they were well-educated women, and no men in the grammar school at all. They were all women. But I figured that I had excellent teachers, and of course my folks were, my father being sort of literary, he wrote poetry and stuff, he always watched your English and things of that sort, but no technical influence whatsoever in the home, nor in my grammar school.
When did you start helping your uncle Norman? How early did that occur?
I guess it would be around my 7th and 8th grade, maybe a little before that even, when I was 6th or 7th grade in school. And this continued probably up until my sophomore and a year in high school. I went back and forth between my home and my grandfolks' home, spending a lot of time there in my grandfolks' home, simply because it was more interesting. And there was some influence, not negligible, of my associates also in the new location I was in. When I started to play games with the kids on the street, we lived in a German, I would say there were German, Scotch, and Irish, and English neighborhood that was building up at that time. And so we had a great variety of children to play with. Some were a bad influence and some were a good influence. But we had quite a gang on that street. And I learned what pyrus and sulfur was pretty early from those people. A few things like that. But I think my interest in chemistry stemmed somewhat from that source. Probably more from the fact that my grandfather got huge boxes of fireworks from the Chinese who were migrating through the country at that time from New York to San Francisco.
This was your grandfather Souther?
My grandfather Souther. And he would put on a display which every 4th of July, which attracted most of the residents of Auburn Park in those days. As they were really tremendous fireworks, and that had quite an effect on me too. So chemistry was probably more important to me in those days, as I thought more of it as a great thing to be engaged in the rest of my life than I did of physics, although things reversed later on.
Was that prior to your taking chemistry in high school?
Yeah, this was all prior to that. And we had chemistry sets and in those days, which are much better than the chemistry sets today. I just was trying to demonstrate one for my young grandchild, a boy out in California. I was simply amazed at the caution that's been put into the chemistry sets today. About all they could do was use salt and carbon and bicarbonate, and all the interesting chemicals were not allowed.
Were you doing any reading, scientific reading, or?
Well, yeah, you know, the popular type of reading when I was in this stage in my life, I was not looking for fiction, although I did read some Sherlock Holmes and things of that sort. But I mainly was interested in noting the new books on the engineering shelf, and they weren't very great, but I was always influenced by those. They had one set I still remember, with men who do things. And that was a... And another influence, I think, was Gernsback's journals, the old Gernsback journals, which were the electrical experimenter, and there was one other one, which was more of a chemical journal. They were sort of a fantastically presented subject matter, but they did have instructive parts to them, too. And this young uncle that I mentioned subscribed to those, so they were accessible to me.
And then where did you go to high school?
High school was very satisfactory for me. It was the Francis Parker High School at 67th Street and Stewart Avenue, occupying quite a campus there because it was the Chicago Normal College also in those days. It was a small high school, as high schools grow today. I'd say our graduating class was probably 30. But we did have excellent instruction, and when we got into the the junior and senior years, the science teaching was probably better than any place in Chicago at that time. We had a Dr. Wigger in chemistry, who was a PhD from Northwestern. And he was a very serious person and a good instructor. Not excessively tough when it came to the students, but reasonably so. But the tough one was the physics teacher, who was a woman. And she was responsible for me going to college, really, finishing college, and going to college in the first place.
What was her name?
Mabel Walbridge. Walbridge. Her father was a professor at the University of Cornell, I believe, and they lived, as a young girl, she lived on the campus. She was probably in her 60s when she was teaching physics at Parker. And she had a master's degree in physics from the University of Colorado, and had instruction from Michelson and people like that, Millikan and a few others at the time, and was a very tough teacher. I mean, she demanded results. And most of my friends that I knew in high school didn't like her at all. But for me, she was really a windfall because, as I say, I wouldn't have gone to college if it hadn't been for her. Because she, in my senior, I guess this would be senior year, I think, was physics, she decided that four of her students would take the University of Chicago competitive exams, which were given every year for the Middle West, over the entire Middle West. This provided tuition for the first year, full tuition for the first year, and if you're in the 25 highest, tuition for the second year, and if you're in the 25 highest, the third year, and so on. She had two students. I was one, and a fellow by the name of Rudnick, Phil Rudnick, was another. And there were a couple in mathematics, under the name of, I'm not sure I remember his name now. Anyway, there were four of us, I believe, that were slated to take these exams. But what she did for me was to tutor me at night for a long time, so that when I took the exam, I was about prepared for almost every question. I'm sure memory pretty near, you know. And I came in a tie with a fellow from Indiana, I think he was, and he dropped out, so I had the scholarship. Mm-hmm. Well, that's getting a little ahead of my story, I guess, because I had by that time gone to work.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about that. So, I wasn't clear what year you finished high school and when you started working at the General Chemical Company.
Okay, I graduated from Parker High in the winter of 1920. Immediately after that, I was a candidate to go to work. Well, my sister, who was a year or two behind me in the same school, has some girlfriends, and their father worked for the General Chemical Company. He was chief engineer of the Calumet plant. The Calumet plant was a heavy chemical plant, turning out enormous quantities of sulfuric, nitric, and hydrochloric, zinc chloride, and sodium sulfide, and salt cake, which is sodium hydrogen sulfate. And I had, by that time, had two laboratories in my home. We had moved, and I had one in the basement of the place I moved to, which more or less was an electrical laboratory more than anything else. I guess I had microphones and all kinds of spark coils and things of that sort. And then we had moved again, and I had taken this job at General Chemical, so I said, well, I'm having a chemical laboratory now. So I had a chem lab in the basement because I could get all the chemicals I wanted, mainly. I never did a great deal with it, I must confess, but nevertheless, I had it. I had some nice labeled bottles and all that stuff, but each chemical in its proper place. But that, the chemical experience was another thing that was a tremendous influence on me, mainly for one person, and that was a fellow by the name of A.W. Walgren, W-A-H-L-G-R-E-N, Albert. And he was a self-made analytical chemist. I don't think, he had finished high school, and I think that's about all. And at that time, he was not head of the lab. This was in 1920, in the summer of 1920, when I went there. And Mr. Madison, who was the chief engineer, Matty, they called him, got me that job. And the fellow head of the lab was a guy named Farbrook? I better not try to identify him. But anyway, Farbach, that was the name, F-R-A-H-B-A-C-H, I think. And the chief chemist was a fellow named Brooks, very nice guy. Farbach was a little questionable because he was testing for methyl alcohol and ethyl alcohol for his friends during prohibition time. But anyway, Walgren was what you would call a tough analytical chemist, one who wanted new technique. You know, he knew how to do analyses and how to police beakers and things of that sort to get the right results. And he appreciated precision and cleanliness and accuracy. And when we would do anything wrong, and I had no experience whatsoever in analytical chemistry, he really would coach us. We were only getting $15 a week. Nevertheless, the coaching was worth quite a bit. And as a result of all of this, when I got to the university later and took quant and qual, I knew more about quant than the assistants in the lab did by a long shot. But things, I then found out I had won the scholarship. So when October 1st came in 1920, I immediately went to the university on October 1st. And I stayed at the university for 2 years. And I won the scholarship the second year also, getting my best grade, of course, in sciences. I took all chemistry and physics and math those 2 years. I got permission to do this because I figured I'd only go 2 years probably. And I wanted to get as much science as possible. I couldn't graduate with that. But I did get by with it. And I was right. I didn't win a scholarship for the third year. And there were no loans or anything in those days. So I was forced to go back to work. And this would be in 1922. In the meantime, let's see what had happened in the meantime. I had taken courses in chemistry and quant and qual and organic and qualitative. Stieglitz.
Okay, I was going to ask you who you, some of your instructors.
Stieglitz was, of course, had the qualitative text. There were two volume text and quality, which is a real modern text and covered the, it was very popular over the country in those days. And Schlesinger in inorganic chemistry was well known, and Gladfelt in organic chemistry, and Mary Rising was one of the few, there was a number of women there. Mary Rising was one. She was a very good instructor in general chemistry and qualitative. And in physical chemistry, we had Young and Hawkins. Although I didn't know Hawkins at that time. He was my thesis professor later, but I did not know him during my undergraduate, first undergraduate years at all. And there was W.A. Noyes, or A.W. Noyes, which is
W.A.
Noyes, yeah. W. Albert Noyes, I guess. And he was about my age at that time. I guess he was one of the youngest instructors that we had.
Did you take any physical chemistry in that first 2 year period? Or was it up just through organic and the quantitative?
I don't recall. I didn't know it. I think I took a course from Young, but I'm not sure. At any rate, it wasn't very much. I did take physics course.
Okay.
And I was taking physics from Monk to start with, Professor Monk, and Gale, and this fellow was an astronomer, and he taught I guess he taught math. I was taking physics, math, and chemistry. And the math was the hardest for me, but the physics I got by fine with, and the chemistry I got by fine with. I got good marks in those. And math, I got B's, but I was working, spending an awful lot of time on math to get B's. Anyway, that 2 years went pretty fast, and in the summers, I was working at various jobs.
But you didn't go back to General Chemical in the summer?
No, but I did go back to General Chemical. I at the end of the sophomore year, I had to get a full-time job.
I was curious what you did in that intervening In the summer of 21, I guess.
In the summer of 21, I worked for James Levy Aircraft Company, whom my uncle was a manager, and that was a totally new experience. Levy had bought, after the war of 1918, First World War, he had bought all kinds of airplanes in their original crates, Jennies and Canucks and Avros, and he had imported by himself from Europe a big de Havilland bomber.
Mm.
And these were all set up in a church, like a sales room. And he was selling these things to barnstormers. $500 for a whole airplane in a crate for a Jenny.
Mm.
And I was, my uncle was manager, and I was sort of a parts boy. I was a shipping clerk. Ship propellers, these fellows that go down in the fields, you know. I also had a high gasoline for them when they were going up and down the Lake Michigan when the Pageant of Progress was going. The farmers were all coming in and getting rides for $2.50, $5 a piece. They'd line up with their wives, you know. Well, that was a very interesting time. We'd go out and some of these fires were, of course, fantastic. And one of them, by the name of Diggins, is recorded in the museum, the NASA National Space
Museum. The Air Space Museum in Washington.
In Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He is mentioned there in that section where they have the barnstorming mm-hmm. pilots. They have a small section devoted to barnstormers. And the 1911 fair in Chicago, which I remember, with these guys flying right over the straw hats, you know, and sitting out in the stress. But that was, my uncle became, after that, started his own company, Chicago Aerial Survey Company. And that became Chicago Aerial Industries later. And then he sold the business to Loeb of Sears Roebuck. And of the Leopold and Loeb fame, and retired.
The uncle who had this, was this Norman, or was this a
different? Oh, no, this is a Fuller.
Oh, it's a Fuller.
And E.W. Fuller was his name,
okay.
Eugene W. Fuller. He was a very, very good businessman, and he never would touch an engine or get himself dirty at all, but he's very good in the front office. Now,
so then you ended up.
That was a summer. See,
right.
That was two summers. I think that would be 1920 or 21 and 22 in there.
Yes, you said you started in Chicago on October 1st of 20, so it would be the summer of 21.
Probably, yes.
And then
I worked there twice, two summers. One, I think, in 19 and one in 21. It seemed to me I was there twice for that short time. That was
mm-hmm.
only a matter of 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's the summer quarter, which the summer quarter is the time, it was the time in Chicago, when all the teachers from the hinterlands would come out and take their summer courses.
I see. Okay.
And I met a lot of those later because I started going summer quarters.
Uh-huh.
But that was therefore only a 3-month stint.
I see.
For me.